Welcome to another episode of Pat and the Fat Man, where we like to talk about movies, sports, and whatever else we feel like. I'm Pat.
And I'm the Fat Man, also known as Bruce.
Also known as Bruce, coming at you with an update on the sports ball. We did not think we would be back to this so soon. We figured we'd have at least a couple weeks before this start. Like, as of this recording, UFL football has not even started yet. Opening day for baseball hasn't happened yet. We figured this would be months in the making, and yet we're back to you now because of all of the S that went down.
So we got a bunch of news, and that we haven't agreed on what we're going to review next. So it kind of just works out this way. But much to our sports fans' delight, we're coming up with all the new sports shenanigans that have been going on.
Sport shenanigans, anigans, anigans, anigans. Shenanigans, shenanigans, shenanigans. Sports shenanigans with your pal Bruce and Pat. All right, what shenanigan do you want to start with first?
Let's go with March Madness, just because I think that's the happiest one and the easiest one to get through for you and I, and at least the parts that you and I can be able to talk about. I don't know if you followed the whole tournament. I haven't. I've just been keeping up with A&M to a certain degree.
For those of you who don't know what March Madness is, and only know about it because everything says March Madness for like a 4-week period in March.
Well, that, and if you like Wendy's as much as I do, I mean, you can't avoid it.
Yeah, that's true.
That would be like you and me if we worked at a Wendy's.
Yeah, that would be us. For those of you who have not been paying attention over the last years, Wendy's has brought their A game on the commercial front. It just seems like their commercials are getting funnier and funnier and funnier somehow. And it's basically centered around this team of that works at a Wendy's and the shenanigans that they get into. My favorite so far has been the one girl who says the new pumpkin spice Frosties that they had in the fall. And she was like, I really love these so much, like, I have to take me time. And she's sitting in her car, and the two of the, like, doofus guys come out trying to ask her a question. Is the spork really a fork, or is it a spoon? And she's like, that's a good question. And she just rolls the window up. Yep. So good.
Well, what's the answer?
Two hot coffees. So the most recent one has featured two of the doofuses basically jamming out to Darude Sandstorm because the Dave single is $1 right now for March Madness, which kind of makes me want to go get a Dave single. So,
and the double's $2.
Oh, really?
Yes, go in the app and you'll see $1 for the single and $2 for the double.
What about $3 for the triple?
Sadly, they did not put that. However, having watched those commercials and recently watching Food That Built America on Hulu, I have really wanted to try the triple, because you come to find out they made the double just so that way people would feel that it's about the same burger as all the other guys. That was their standard bearer for the longest time, was the double.
Interesting. Enough advertising for Wendy's, right? We should probably shoot Wendy's. I need you to tweet Wendy's about how much free advertising we gave them, just to see what kind of snarky response they get. If you're not aware and you want some good laughs, head over to Wendy's X account and just scroll through their responses to people. It is amazing. They are snarky as hell. And they get snarky on other people too. So March Madness is a basketball tournament that takes the top, God, what did they start at, 64?
Yes.
Yeah, the top 64 NCAA college basketball teams, which that's about half of the college basketball teams.
It's a lot.
It's quite a few of them, and pairs them up all against each other, and then usually in a best versus worst kind of a format.
But the funny part is at least the numbers work.
Yeah, ish.
That's what makes you wonder, and I'm just gonna fall back on this because we talk about it almost every time we talk about sports ball, but the college football playoff system
is terrible.
It's the same organizations, the NCAA, and yet they said, you know what? 64 made sense to a certain degree, and we've got those numbers to play with. But over here with football, we're going to start with 12, and then we're going to change our mind to 14, neither of which numbers actually work evenly out in a playoff system.
No. So stupid. I know you've heard us complain about it ad nauseum, but
I was going to say I digest, though.
I cannot complain about it too much. I just can't. It's stupid. I'm sure our editor is rolling her eyes right now. Oh, my gosh. Here he goes again. Just expand it to 32. Just make it fun for everybody. Either way, start with 64 teams, and it's a full bracket. Make it all the way down to the top two teams, and that's the winner of March Madness and the winner of college, you know, NCAA college men's basketball. So invariably, Texas A&M makes it to the tournament and then usually gets beat the first round because we get put against the best possible f-ing team on the planet.
Well, that's because we're the worst possible team on the bracket.
No, even like we were ranked number 9, right? Uh-huh. Ranked number 9. Our first pairing is against number 8, Nebraska, which, okay, middle of the road, fine, whatever. And then our next one against number 1, the top seed.
In Houston.
Thanks. Thanks. And see, the commission hates us. They hate A&M. I don't know why. I don't know what we did. But boy, howdy, do they hate us. So we did not make it past the round of 32. So we did not make it to the Sweet 16, sadly.
However, the way we got through that game, though, I mean, we didn't go out like punked, like we didn't get blown out.
We did not go out like bees.
I didn't watch the game because I learned my lesson from the Florida game. If I don't watch the games, we win. We do pretty good. So I woke up in the middle of the night and found out that we hit a buzzer beater at the end of regulation to send it into overtime. And then we only lost by 5.
Yeah, I thought the game was over at like 3 minutes because we were down 12 points or like somewhere between 8 and 12 points at that point. And I was like, well, we're done. This is it. We fell apart. You know, we played a good one half and maybe a quarter of another half. We couldn't hit our free throws for anything. And I was so killer. We were at like 50% on free throws.
Wow.
50%. And we were constantly getting fouled. This was not a small number of shots. This was over 30 points, potential 30 points.
Well, I was going to say, maybe the reason why we kept getting fouled is because they're like, you can't hit nothing.
Yeah, I have to assume so. But like, it was terrible. If we had made our free throws, we would have won this handily. Mm. But we couldn't, and we didn't. But yeah, it came down to the wire. That was crazy. The last 2 minutes of regular game time and then the last 2 minutes of overtime were just nuts because in both we were heavily deficited. We were down by almost double digits and had to kind of crawl our way back. And we did it in regulation time. We did not do it in overtime. And it was not, it was nuts. It was like, it was that last like 4 seconds just watching the guys try and find a guy who could make a 3-pointer and finally finding one guy who basically like picked the ball up off the ground, shot it from like half stance, falling backwards, made it 86-86 going overtime. I was like, no way. Of course, if we'd made, I don't know, at least one more free throw, that would have been the game for us, but we hadn't. Just so many missed free throws. For those of you who don't know, a free throw is if a guy gets fouled egregiously enough or within the shooting zone and or he's in the process of taking a shot, he gets to shoot the ball from the free throw line, which is, I don't know, 10 yard. I don't know. Not very far.
It's supposed to be a gimme shot.
Yeah. Dead center in front of the basket. Super easy to make. The only person who never made them was Shaq. He was awful. Awful at free throws. Everybody would just foul him as hard as they possibly could to keep him from getting into the basket. The problem is the man is just enormous.
He's enormous.
There was no stopping him. Unless you could fully stand your ground and not move your legs and have him run you over and get the foul, you were just not going to be able to foul him in such a way to stop him from dunking the ball. Both games were really fun to watch. The first game was ridiculous against Nebraska. We were like 80% on our 3-pointer shots. Mm-hmm. And we had more than 20 points in 3-pointers, like 21 points in 3. It was phenomenal, the number of 3-pointers we made. We ended up like 20 plus points over them when the buzzer finally went. It was nuts. We destroyed Nebraska. The Houston game was very physical. It was very defensive. Both teams were pretty amazing on defense. Both teams were very powerhouse in the rebounds and free throws. If you're talking like the basics of basketball, other than dribbling the ball and shooting, you know, if we're talking like blocking, tackling, being dribbling and shooting, then like the next thing, which is it'd be runners and wide receivers blocking for the guys behind them, and just like the next level basics. Like if you can win the free throw line and you can win the rebounds, you can win a game easy. In my mind, that's how you win games. And both teams were really good at the rebound, and we really stank it up on the free throw line. So we're out. March Madness is continuing on. They're down to the Sweet 16. After that elimination round, they'll go down to the Elite Eight and then down to the Final Four and then the championship, which I don't know, probably be Duke or maybe Houston.
A lot of people ask, you know, what's the big deal about it? Well, I mean, it's kind of the NCAA finally did something right with sports, which was that they kind of marketed it. And then they did this thing because they have so many teams in this neatly drawn bracket that they made it into a game for spectators to guess who would win all these games and who would finally win the championship. So it turned into a sort of game like, can you pick all the winners through all the rounds and get every single pick right? Which I think to this day has never happened.
No, it's never been done. Start from 64 and go all the way down to the champion. I think it's over a billion to one odds.
Right.
I don't remember what the odds are.
And so it's kind of become like, if you're not into basketball, a gimmicky game. And if you are into basketball, a way to, for you as a sports fan to go, yeah, I know all about sports. I can pick all the winners.
Yeah.
I think to this day, I don't know who it is, but somebody like Warren Buffett or Jeff Bezos or somebody like that has got a standing bet that if somebody can pick all of the brackets correctly, you would pay them $1 million. And there's always, you know, like you said, Wendy's does a marketing thing. Other companies and things do marketing things for March Madness. So that's why it's such a big deal. The funny part is that this tournament's probably going to go well into April.
Yeah.
It doesn't even start the first week. If it started the first week in March, it probably would be all of March. So the irony is that the tournament ends in April.
Yeah. What makes it so interesting is that it's single elimination bracket, right?
Yeah.
So you play a bajillion games. In my mind, that's the biggest problem with basketball and baseball is you play so many games in these sports. So each game loses kind of its matterness.
Six games.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It's single elimination. So
yeah.
Each game matters, right?
Right.
You're not going to play the next game unless you win, right? Whereas in the regular season, you're playing a ton of games.
Right.
So it kind of feels a lot of times like games don't matter. And because every game literally is whether or not you go on or not, that's why it's sort of the madness part of it.
Right.
Is everybody's gets super into it because of the single elimination.
The meaning behind like the regular season, if you're thinking that far ahead, if you're thinking your school can actually get into the tournament each year, is you want to do your best because you want the higher seed because you want to play the easier team.
Right. Yeah. No, exactly.
You don't want to be in the middle of the road because the middle of the road is where it's the toughest. Or, you know, from middle down to the bottom.
Yep. So that is the madness of March that is going on right now. I'm sure by the time this gets out, it will have been long over. But the rest of our news will not be quite so stale.
So I guess next let's talk about the NFL. You want to talk about free agent moves and trades and things like that? Well, no real trades, but just free agent moves. Or do we want to talk about the rules first?
Dallas free agency. We did nothing. All in, Jerry. Yeah, Dallas did nothing. We gave away our running back. That's what we did.
Which one? Ezekiel Elliott?
No, Zeke's already been gone. He was gone last season. No, Tony Pollard is gone now. Whatever. This was like the most disappointing free agency ever for the Cowboys. That's all I've got. That's it for me. Thanks.
So the Browns did moves that were like WTF and kind of, I guess, the WTF was letting Joe Flacco go so that way we can replace him with Jameis Winston. I don't know. At this point, I want to call the Cleveland team the Cleveland Browns presented by the Mayo Clinic because it seems like all we do is take in rehab projects, you know, guys that nobody else wants that we're like, we're going to turn them into a name so that way they can go off and play better somewhere else. I mean, I don't get it. Joe Flacco went on to, I want to say he went to the Patriots or something like that for $8 million for a single year. Like, you're telling me you couldn't pay Joe Flacco $8 million for a year after the amazing job he just did this past year? Nope, nope. So now we're going to get stuck with an overpaid quarterback in Deshaun Watson, and backing him up is going to be Jameis Winston, the most overrated player NFL quarterback that we've had since God only knows who.
Yeah, I don't know why they couldn't have shelled out the $8 million for Joe Flacco. I just I mean, the amount of good he did the team. I know they lost in the first round of the playoffs, but still, like, they, I mean, by a lot of accounts, they shouldn't even have been there.
Right. Like, and this is after the season where you went and you saw that when you let go of Baker Mayfield and were like, yes, we got rid of a terrible quarterback, he goes on and in his first season with Tampa Bay takes him to the playoffs.
Yep.
Which is what he did for you in Ohio, which no quarterback before him in the last 20 years was able to do for you. And you're like, no, he's a terrible quarterback. We don't want him. God. And then in our free agency, we picked up a running back. I can't remember who from where. And then we picked up Jake Jeudy from the Rams, I want to say it was, or the Broncos. It was the Broncos, which everyone was excited about, I guess. Not a name I'm familiar with, so guess that was a good thing. It's just head tilting. On the more interesting side, and this is what makes, you know, the Browns move so much more infuriating, is that the Steelers decided they were going to get off their asses and pick up Russell Wilson, who was let go from the Broncos, and Justin Fields from the Chicago Bears. One was a proven Super Bowl quarterback, which everyone can have their arguments about how good he is. The other is former, did he win the Heisman?
Which one is it?
Justin Fields.
Fields. I can't remember, to be honest.
If he didn't, he went to Ohio State and he did really well with Ohio State. And the only reason why no one's, no one knows how good or bad Justin Fields is because he got stuck with the Bears.
The Bears.
The Bears.
The Bears.
So both of them are going to be with Pittsburgh fighting it out for the top spot. Either way, I feel that Pittsburgh's going to come out with a winner. This, after a couple of years of us kicking the crap out of them, we are going to let them come back and kick the crap out of us. Because why? We have Deshaun Watson and Jameis Winston. I mean, maybe I'll be wrong. Maybe this will be the best Browns team since God only knows when. I'm just saying, when you look at the numbers, when you look at the news articles, when you look at it, how it looks, if you're a Browns fan, you're probably not taking that money.
Yeah. Yeah, Fields, he never won the Heisman. He was a nominee at least a couple, I think 2 years.
Okay, but he was highly rated, I'll say that.
He was, and he was a decent quarterback. I mean, he played for Ohio State, so.
So that was a lot of the stuff that happened that made at least some news. The Eagles picked up somebody, and you're like, whoa, who did they pick up?
Oh, yeah. I'd be angry if I wasn't already angry about the Cowboys' non-moves.
Let me see if I can find out here.
Saquon Barkley.
Yeah, Saquon Barkley.
And Bryce Huff.
And I guess that's a coup for them. I guess Saquon Barkley's still pretty good, though it's hard to tell because he spent the last few years
with the Giants. So that's kind of a coup over the Giants because we're in the same division. The Eagles, the Giants, the Cowboys, and the Washington football team. Yeah. I think the Eagles probably did the best, which means they're going to win the division this year. If you're not aware of this, folks, the NFC East has never had a repeat winner in our division. We never, like, whoever won the last year will not win this next year. So Cowboys won last year. We won't win the divisional championship this next year. It'll probably be the Eagles. Still like to beat them twice, but we'll see. They won't have Kelsey anymore, so they won't be able to do the brotherly shove quite so effectively.
That's mostly the kind of the sexy trade stuff that's been going on. We haven't had the draft yet. I don't know. It doesn't seem like the draft is all that exciting this year. I don't think there's a whole lot of college prospects this year that everyone's gearing up for. That being said, it's from my perspective, it's probably because the Browns, we don't have a first round pick, and we're not, would I say, in a desperate need for like a quarterback or anything terribly sexy. Like right now, the Browns are in the normal football team kind of space where they just need to fill in spots where they have weaknesses and then go out and perform.
Yeah, we need a running back. So we don't have one. I mean, we've got Uncle Rico. Rico Dowdle.
Uncle Rico.
And he was okay. Yeah, we call him Uncle Rico.
Sounds like he's from, like, Colombia or something.
Well, Uncle Rico is the uncle from Napoleon Dynamite, the guy who was playing football in the...
Oh.
Living out of his van.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, we call him... Yeah. So Dowdle's okay, but yeah, I don't... Whatever, man. I don't know. I don't know who we'll get. You know, there weren't any, like... Last year was the year of the running back. There were some amazing running backs coming out of college. And, you know, we didn't draft any of them because at the time, you know, we kind of still had Zeke and we had Pollard. I mean, we ended up getting rid of Zeke, but we had Pollard, we had Dowdle. We thought they were going to be great. And there really aren't. I mean, there are good, don't get me wrong, plenty of good running backs coming out of college right now, but they're not like the game changing kind of guys you had last year, you know, and B.J. Robinson and A-Chain. Like those guys coming out of college are just the speed and the ability of those guys. I mean, Robinson was literally the only reason Texas scored points for an entire season. I mean, it wasn't last season. It was the season before that where I think they finished like four or five. They didn't go to a bowl because of how bad they were. And Robinson was the only reason they scored any points. Phenomenal athlete. But yeah, nobody like that. So I don't know. I don't know what it's going to look like. I'm going to watch it. So I'm interested, but we do need a running back.
So I think that leads into the next thing, which is as of this recording, there have been two major updates to the rules, and they haven't finalized all of them yet, but these two they've released because they're going to make the biggest noise. Let's start with the kickoffs, because you'll know this more because you watch the XFL.
Yeah. Huge fundamental change to the kickoff. We're moving basically to the XFL kickoff. So I'm going to go over the high points because there are many of them. Step one, the kicking team will kick from the 35-yard line, but players on the kicking team will line up at the opponent's 40. Now, those players cannot move and the kicker himself cannot cross the 50 until the ball hits the ground or a receiving player in the landing zone, and that's got quotes around it, from the goal line to the 20 or the end zone. So basically, instead of what you got now, which is all the guys lining up on what, the 40?
Yeah.
The kicker kicks it and then everybody's across the line and it's go, right?
Well, it's like everyone lined up on their own 40s.
Yeah. So this moves the kicker back 5 more yards. The kicking team moves up to the opponent's 40-yard line, but they're not allowed to move until that ball hits the ground, which or gets into the hands of an opposing player.
Right.
Which means that given how many touchbacks there are, there's not going to be a whole lot of movement that occurs on kickoffs.
Because here's the funny part, and where it gets a little confusing, it depends on where the ball lands.
Lands, yeah. All right, so next, the receiving team must have a minimum of 9 players lined up in the setup zone, which is between the 30 and 35-yard lines, with a minimum of 2 returners lined up in the landing zone. Or, sorry, maximum. 2. So you can have 2 guys in the backfield lined up to catch the ball. The other 9 guys have to be on the 30, between the 30 and 35-yard line. This is a major change from what you saw, you know, previous to this, where basically they had the guys kind of interspersed as blockers to kind of slow down the kicking team as they came at the runner. Now they're all between the 30 and 35, which means they are somewhere between 5 and 10 yards away from all of the rest of the other team, which is on the 40-yard line. So that's huge, right? Everybody's just right there.
Right.
Next, any kick that hits the landing zone must be returned, while any kick that bounces into the end zone from the landing zone must either be returned or downed by the receiving team for a touchback to the 20-yard line. So if it lands in the landing zone, then they've got to bring it back. Which is interesting. Then again, there's a lot of strategy now. Like, as a kicking team, what do? Do you try to make it always go into the end zone so they can't try and return it? Do you bet on your special team guys being able to make it? So it does change the strategy up.
Right, because if it doesn't at least make it to the 20-yard line, it's considered not a good kick, and therefore they get to, the receiving team gets to put the ball at their 40.
Which is huge, right?
Right.
If you don't even make the 20-yard line, like you short it, then the receiving team gets the ball at the 40, which is nuts. That's an amazing field position to start out with. Any kick that goes out of the back end of the end zone is also a touchback and goes to the 30-yard line.
Right.
So it's now they're trying to get the kickers to kind of hit a sweet spot instead of going long.
Yeah, right. So that way they don't have these fair catches or kneeling it down at a certain point or, you know, something like that. There's also, like you said, the penalty, like where if the ball lands in the landing zone but goes into the end zone and gets downed there, it's like a typical touchback. You only get it at the 20.
Yep. No more fair catches on the kickoff. No onside kicks until the fourth quarter and only by a team that's down. And this is kind of a weird one, but kickoffs after safeties are going to be from the 20-yard line instead of from the 35. And the kicker will have the option to use a tee, setup, and landing zones will not change. And then penalties that carry over to the kickoffs would only impact the spot of the kick, not the setup or landing zones, and not where players line up. So this is a radically different kickoff scenario.
Right.
It's going to be interesting to see. You're basically, this first year, you're going to really get to see what special teams coaches are up to snuff and who's been coasting.
You know what I'll bet you'll see is the cameras catching the on the field refs and judges pulling out diagrams and rule books, you know, and like a slide chart almost. All right, this happened, so this happened, so okay, you got to go there and then you got to go over there. All right. No, Jimmy, no, you're not in the right spot. I may not know all of this, but I know you're damn wrong.
Yeah, radical departure from what they had been doing. Interesting enough, it lines up with what we said, like the XFL and what has moved forward into the UFL, which is slowly becoming kind of the minor league, but doesn't match college, right? So special right. teams guys coming out of college are going to have to relearn along with all the special teams guys in the NFL. So it'll probably be a rough first year. I'm guessing the first 4 weeks, we're going to see a lot of penalties.
Well, you know, the funny part is, as if kickers don't have enough pressure, now they have to play the game where, you know, the coach may not tell them what to do because he expects them to know what to do. Or there just is an added performance expectation on the kickers, who are guys that are the least paid guys on the team to begin with. These guys that get all the pressure, but almost none of the reward, you know, unless it's, you know, the kick. Unless, you know, like, you know, a regular field goal, you know, in the first quarter of a game that doesn't matter and he misses it, they'll be like, you know, and they lose the game. They're like, ah, oh, we lost the game because of you. Our season's because of you.
Yeah. It's all your fault, kicker.
Right. The whole season's your fault. Even though he gets paid the least amount, like, I'm like, even the equipment guy gets almost as much as he does. I'm sure that's not true, but I'm just saying. So I think that's what is interesting, is whether or not this affects how much kickers get paid, because I think if you're going to start putting more thinking into the hands of kickers, then you know, they should be paid a little more. And I think we've talked about this before, about kickers and the things that they have to think about and do.
All of the kind of stuff they've got to keep in their head, right? Mm-hmm. And now this is just a whole new slew of rules. It's interesting because I have a feeling right now your kickoff guy is usually your field goal guy. Mm-hmm. And you have a separate punter, right? And those are your two kickers, really, is your guy that kicks your kickoffs and field goals and your punter. It would not surprise me if we see a third kicker. Mm-hmm. If we see a field goal guy, a punter, and a kickoff guy. If we see this become a thing.
I think that only applies to teams that don't play important somewhere else, you know, in the group. Because what little I know of from when I listen to the preseason stuff about how the Browns get their teams and how they, in the preseason practices and whatnot, how they pick who's going to be on the roster and who's not, and how they're going to put who where, is that oftentimes it's a numbers game that becomes tighter and tighter until the start of the season. There might be teams that they're like, oh, we could easily give up this, you know, this particular numbered spot for an extra kicker. Whereas others are like, I don't know if we can even, you know, fit a third kicker onto our roster.
Yeah.
So we may have to really emphasize this to the one or two kickers that we have on our team.
I think it'll be interesting. I think it'll take probably potentially a couple of years for it to all shake out and really...
And for us to get used to it.
Yeah. It is going to look really weird that first week. Really strange. You're like, why is the kicker all the way back there all by himself? And why is the rest of the team lined up like right there? This is weird. That's how it's going to feel.
Well, I guess the big reason to have them lined up the way they are is that way you don't have these like gigantic running places, you know, running spaces for the kicking team to use all that momentum and force to just beat the ever loving crap out of whoever has that ball.
Right. Yeah. So you don't basically have the car wreck.
Yeah.
That the returner is expected to be in every time he catches the ball. It's less likely in this scenario. He's more likely to get caught, you know, at a line or potentially break through. It should theoretically, it's supposed to make the kickoffs more exciting.
Yeah.
And less predictable. And I think it definitely has. It's definitely going to make them less predictable. Whether it makes them more exciting is yet to be seen.
Well, I was going to say, this rule, I guess, is made to make it more exciting, whereas the next rule we're going to talk about, I'm not even sure we're going to end up playing football in the next, you know, 20 years the way this is going.
I've already predicted it. We're going to flag football. That's where we're headed. Right.
Right. I don't know if you've seen that, the TikTok bit, the guy was talking about the new rule change, but in the end, he you know, said the NFL, he mocked the NFL saying, you know, an anachronism for flag, you know, but so what are we talking about? We're talking about, apparently now there is a new rule for defensive players are banned from doing what's called a hip drop tackle. The way it was explained to me, or the way that I've read it, is essentially defensive player cannot wrap his arm or arms around the middle section of the opposing team. And then after wrapping his arms around him, just essentially lay his body into the player and essentially just in an effort to bring his entire weight to bring the guy to the ground by falling on top of him. If you're me and you're watching the demonstrations of what they're talking about, you go, isn't that just a tackle?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what else these guys can do to bring them down. And what's even better is that the penalty is outrageously dumb. It's 15 yards and automatic first down.
It's gonna like, be a lot of touchdowns because of this,
right? It's
basically
like, it's like the new pass interference rules all over again. You know, just like, you're just giving these teams, the offenses, an excuse to set themselves up so that way the other team has no other choice but to either let you score or commit a foul that basically gets you the ball downfield anyways.
Yeah, I'm gonna read it off just because of how, like,
yeah.
It is a foul if the players uses, awesome grammar guys, the following technique to bring a runner to the ground. A, grabs the runner with both hands or wraps the runner with both arms. And B, unweights himself by swiveling and dropping his hips and or lower body, landing on and trapping the runner's legs at or below the knee. Yeah, I see this being a very circumstantial penalty, because did it get him below the knee? Did he unweight himself? Really? Mm-hmm. Did he do this? Did he do that? Like, I can see, so like, this is going to be pass interference all over again. You're right. Because was this tackle one of those tackles? I don't know. I don't know if he swiveled his hips or not. You know,
the other option is to avoid the debate altogether. You do the half-ass tackling that we've seen where the guy touches the guy and then, you know, throws his body around like he's trying to avoid hitting him.
Right.
You know, like the half-ass tackles that we complain about all the time, you know.
Because they know they can just keep running.
That's why the running back ends up 20 yards further downfield after contact.
I got to stop just because a guy touched me.
Right. And like I said, there are more rules to be voted on, but these are the two that the NFL absolutely had to come out with this week. And my guess is that it's to make everyone blow their top off now, so that way by the time we come to, you know, September, August, we're all exhausted by it. But nope, we're not going to let them forget it. There's just no way that we're going to forget this.
Like the kickoff thing, you know, it's a radical change, but it could be better for the game. The tackle thing is just, it's a very confusing foul.
Right.
And I see it being misused, not used, overused, but improperly done in pretty much every game. I think every game this season is going to have one of these calls.
Right. And if your thing is about player safety and making sure guys aren't terminally hit, that's not something you're going to change with the rules. That's something you have to change through the culture of football. Guys just keep bulking themselves up because they feel like they have to be bigger and stronger. The players themselves have to come to the realization that maybe I don't need to be 300 pounds of pure muscle and be able to run at 50 miles an hour to hit somebody. You know what's going to happen. Yeah. Now, granted, you want to make contact, but there's a balance somewhere in there. But, you know, when you don't take it upon yourself and the NFL, they air quotes, feel like they have to do something, you're eventually, you know, helping to erode the game.
I see this as being nothing but fire for internet yelling.
Well, not just the internet. I mean, it's gonna be, yep, you're gonna hear it on ESPN, Fox Sports, I mean, just all over.
Yeah,
it's just gonna be nutso.
All right, so other things in the works. Potentially they want to extend the week or the trade deadline to week 9 instead of being at week 8. They want to give coaches their third challenge if they win one of their first two challenges, not both. Because right now they got to win both challenges and then they get a third. That happens so rarely, it never comes up. Oh. So now they're saying, okay, if they win at least one, they get a third challenge.
Right.
Another thing has been proposed. So during a play that results in a possession change, if fouls are committed by both teams, any major offensive fouls, like unnecessary roughness that were committed before the possession change will now be enforced, which is potentially game changing if you think about it.
Yeah, that's going to be tricky because we're going to have to see how that actually plays out. Like, how much do teams take advantage of that?
And then replay changes. Oh, these were approved. Okay, replay assistant will now be allowed to correct objectively incorrect calls for intentional grounding and roughing the passer. Well, that's nice. Replay review will be allowed when there is clear and obvious visual evidence that the game clock expired before any snap. And then a ruling of a passer down by contact or out of bounds before throwing a pass are now reviewable plays. I think that's all stuff in the right direction. Honestly, I like how the USFL and the XFL did it last year and how they do it this year, which is to say the guys in the field are always backed up by guys in the booth. And if there's any discrepancy between anybody, they stop the play and they do a booth review. It's always a review. Everybody is on their game. They know what's going to happen. Everybody gets their stuff straight and you get the right call. And I think most viewers are okay with waiting the extra couple of seconds to get the right call.
That's true, so long as it in a game, it doesn't happen too often. Because this is where we run into trouble with football games, is that some games the flag is thrown all the time, some games it's not thrown at all. And you know that both of those, the games where the flag's not thrown at all go really quickly, and the ones where they're thrown all the time are incredibly slow. You find complaints on both in both games, you know, for that. So you have to run that delicate balance of, you know, where review come, when is review appropriate and when is review accurate and when is it not needed at all?
You know, the way I've seen it play out in the USFL and the XFL, it hasn't been a burden. Occasionally you get a call that really needs a review. Most of the time you don't. Most of the time everybody's clear, right? The ref makes a call, you know, he throws the flag, they huddle up, they talk, you know, he hits his earpiece and the guy on the earpiece is like, yeah, that's the call. You know, he kind of confers in the same way that the refs get together and confer after a foul. That's the time it takes. So it's the same amount of time. Occasionally you get the ones where it's like, no, we got to look at this from multiple angles. And we do that for a lot of plays already. I'm okay with adding a couple more to that roster.
I mean, again, that's fine. Like I said, it's just going to depend on how often it's used and how well it comes out to be. But I mean, I agree with getting the call right on the field. I mean, we see where it happens too often where it's not right, but at the same time, it can't be challenged by either team.
Yeah. Why did they do that? You just gave them a game. Thanks, ref.
You're just kind of left throwing your hands up going, well, that sucks.
I mean, this isn't baseball or basketball here. Like, this is football. Every game matters. There's only 16 of them. Or 18, or however many we're at now. I don't remember.
Right.
Two other proposed rules changes. Unlimited number of designated to return transactions during the playoffs. which, okay, guy goes out on injured reserve and comes back, that's fine. And then emergency quarterbacks, you can now pull them from your practice squad and not just your 53-man roster, which is interesting because it means your emergency quarterback doesn't have to be one of those 53 people you have on the sidelines. He can be also on the sidelines as a practice squad guy, not taking up a playing spot, which honestly, given what they've done with this emergency quarterback thing, I think that's the way to go with it. I kind of always thought this was silly, to be honest.
Right. And you got to look at like the Browns. I mean, the likelihood of needing your third quarterback these days is
it's there.
It's right? there. You yeah. know,
I mean, we didn't have to do it this year with the Cowboys, but I want to say we did it the year before or the year before that.
Well, you had what was it? Dalton. Wasn't he like a third string guy?
No, Dalton was second string, but he went down and because Dak hurt his finger in like the third game, fourth game that season.
Right.
And he was hurt his leg. Sorry. Full blown.
That was Achilles. The compound fracture on the field.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so Andy Dalton, not Dalton Schultz. Golly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Andy Dalton comes in. Basically, he's the starter. We got two other guys, you know, as his backup. We got to the third guy. You know, we got to basically the fourth quarterback in one game.
Yep.
Because Andy went down, and then I don't think we had Rush at that point. I don't remember who it was. Garoppolo, maybe. And then we got to the fourth guy. But A&M did that too in college. We literally played a true freshman for the bowl game and still almost beat OSU. Almost beat OSU's first string with our fourth and third string. But yeah, the SEC is not an elite conference. Sure, it's not. Plenty of changes, but the really big one was the tackle one. That's going to be just a nightmare from an officiating standpoint. It's going to be a very painful season. I view this similar to targeting, right? Mm-hmm. We're going to have like 2 to 3 years where it's just going to be every game. There's going to be two or three of these calls. About half the time they're going to be bunk. You know, it's going to cost several teams wins or losses. And eventually the guys will get to a point where they don't, you know, they figure out how to tackle without doing whatever this is. Now, you know, this was made for a quote unquote safety reason because the swivel thing apparently causes like a 25% increase in injury rate. I don't know how you, it just seems like such a small subset of, you know, stopping a guy with a ball.
Right. Well, you got to also figure, I mean, okay, you're trying to protect the guy with the ball, but isn't the guy who's trying to get the guy with the ball going to hurt himself to avoid getting this penalty potentially?
Yeah. And that's my question is like, what,
how much is he going to have to twist himself around to do his job and not get penalized?
Right. You know, is this one of those unintended consequences which leads to more injuries because guys are trying to avoid this penalty? I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Targeting was pretty clear, right? Like you can bring a guy down without making those kind of tackles. That nobody, I mean, people have pitched a fit on that one, but everybody was pretty clear. No, you don't got to do that. Yeah. This, on the other hand, I think is a lot more muddy, a lot more difficult.
So I'm going to push on to baseball, but I'm going to do a quick, like, 30-second Major League Soccer thing real quick. The referee strike is finally over. Thank God for that. The referees now have a collective bargaining agreement that goes all the way to 2030. So one of the single largest collective bargaining agreements in professional sport referees ever. Thank God, because last Saturday, the Columbus Crew played Charlotte. I don't know what their team name is. It's just the Charlotte whatever. And I don't care to know because that was such a bogus game that I have ever seen in my entire life. From the get-go, I didn't watch the whole game, but from the part that I did watch, I've heard that even at the kickoff, they couldn't get it right. That these substitute refs came in here, couldn't get it right. A player got hurt on the field. His replacement comes on, has an incidental contact, gets red carded, not a yellow card, not two yellow cards and a red, got straight up red carded. So Columbus has to do like three quarters of the game with 10 players. It was just awful. Then we get another foul that is said to have been inside the box that resulted in a penalty kick against the Crew. Thankfully, that didn't matter because the guy shot just way off, which is remarkable because penalty kicks in soccer, they're almost gimmies.
Yeah.
The second half, more ridiculous fouls, and we ended up losing 2-0 in that game. And it was just one of the worst officiating games I had ever seen. Oh, I'm sorry. I skipped over the biggest. So the Crew would have had a goal, but it was called back for offsides. The problem there was, is while the kick was long and the player may or may not have been offsides, when they went to VAR, you can see when you watch these games on Apple, you can see what the referee's looking at, and then you can see the referee standing in front of the TV screen of what he's looking at. So you could actually see that he's watching exactly what you're watching. And they only showed one angle from the opposite end of the field, looking down towards the far end, and being able to determine offsides. And you're like, how? How could you see he was offsides from that angle? So... It was just bad. And these refs have been complained about throughout the league all season long. This was match day 5. Now, is this going to ruin the Crew's season? No, there's still plenty of soccer games that they can do. There's more games, and this one's not going to be the end of their season, but it was just awful. So we're happy to have real refs back. Of course, we'll still complain because that's what you do in soccer. You complain about the refs.
You complain. That's right.
They're but terrible. Hopefully, now it's less complaining, like actual complaints that are, legitimate and more of a Homer kind of complaints. But we'll kick on to the last thing, which is baseball.
Baseball.
Do we want to go over the rules or do we want to talk about the scandal?
I thought we covered the rules.
Okay. I think we did. I just didn't know.
Increasing the from the first base to the
runner's lane.
From the home plate to first place. Yeah, the runner lane.
And then the change in the pitch clock.
Yeah, we already covered those.
So. And then there's no more blocking of bases for, like, say, second and third base.
Right.
You're not allowed to block in any way, shape, or form. And I know this because we saw it in spring training, blocking the runner from the base.
Yeah.
So then we'll talk about the scandal. If you don't know, there's a generational player called Shohei Ohtani, Japanese baseball player.
Yeah, we talked about him pretty extensively in the last sports ball episode as well.
Right, but we didn't talk about the scandal because it hadn't come out yet.
Correct. It hadn't come out yet.
Ohtani, like so many Japanese players, and actually so many players in baseball right now, doesn't speak very good English. He has an interpreter. It has come out that apparently his interpreter owed a lot of money to a sports booking agent. And I say agent, not agency, because apparently it was a single run betting sports book guy named Bowery, who was under federal investigation for illegal gambling operations.
He's a bookie.
He's a bookie. Yep. That's what he is. And Shohei Ohtani's interpreter owed him what's being reported as $4.5 million in sports betting debt. Allegedly, his interpreter stole this money. This is where we get into some confusion here because we don't know what happens yet because of the timeline. Supposedly, he stole this money from Ohtani's account that he had access to pay off this debt. Now, When this story first broke, supposedly this guy came out and said, yes, I owed this money and I got Ohtani to pay it for me. He didn't know what he was paying for, but he paid my debt because he knows me and he didn't want me to be in trouble. Then he comes out and says, he does an interview with ESPN. And he says, well, he knew what it was for. Neither of us knew that the betting establishment that I had these bets with was illegal because sports betting in California is illegal. Now, he makes it clear. He never betted on baseball. He did it for international soccer, football, both college and professional, basketball, all these things, never baseball. So there's no impropriety in betting within the sport. But after he does this interview with ESPN, he says it was his fault for being in this much debt, and Ohtani didn't want him to be in debt, so he paid it for him. He wasn't happy about it, but he did it. And Ohtani's lawyer comes out and says, no, 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 this money was stolen. And so now everyone's going, whoa, stop, hang on.
Yeah.
What's happening?
What's going on here?
The interpreter's been fired, of course, but everyone's like, we're not commenting. And even the interpreter's now going, well, I'm working on getting a lawyer. So now we don't know what's going on, because we're like, well, how did Ohtani not know what he was paying for? And how did he, I mean, did he know it? And did he know it was wrong? Did you tell him he was wrong? Were these even your gambling debts? You know, or is he just covering for you?
Yeah.
You know, so now there's a question of who knows what. And it's just kind of mind-boggling that, I don't know if you thought about this when thinking about this story. This is a little bit kind of like Brockmire. Mm-hmm. Remember the kangaroo court?
Yes.
Yeah, it's kind of like that.
I did kind of think about that, where the interpreter doesn't want him to play baseball in America anymore and wants to go home. And so he keeps sabotaging, badly interpreting or not interpreting to the pitcher what is being said to him.
Right. In this case, the interpreter is just kind of says he doesn't know, or that he does know, or, you know, it's just really weird. And you're like, okay, so now we're having problems already with professional sports and sports gambling.
Yeah.
At such a high level, because, Ohtani, he's going to get paid $700 million over the course of the next, I don't know, 15, 20 like years.
20 years?
Yeah. Yeah. Most of it deferred, but still.
That's a lot of money.
It is. And so it's kind of a bizarre, and we're all kind of waiting, because the reason why it was found out about the interpreter is that when the FBI was looking into this illegal gambling operation, they found in his books Ohtani's name in some of the wire transfers and in the, like, the memo bar where you had to put in something, you know, what reason are you transferring this money? It said loan. And so the question is, did he know he was paying a bookie, or did he think he was paying back a loan?
Mm-hmm.
Who knows what? And all of a sudden the lawyers are coming in. So who knows what the truth is?
It's a very strange thing, especially right now with kind of the sports betting becoming a regular thing in the U.S. with people having access via their phones now to regularized sports betting, which is something they weren't able to do before. So a lot of people have gotten into the betting game, and we've seen sports teams move into Vegas, which was something that was verboten for the longest time. And now Vegas is a four team city. I want to say they've got the Raiders. They're getting the A's,
and then the Golden Knights.
And then the Golden Knights. I don't want to say they have a WNBA team as well.
Uh huh. I want to say they do too.
And they're hosting F1. So they're one of the three American Grand Tour or Grand Prix cities. So it's Miami, Las Vegas, and Austin.
Oh, Austin, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Wow. They've become a sports mecca. So, yeah, Austin geographically is crazy. So it makes perfect sense having like a really crazy road there. So it kind of goes to show that you're going to have, and think about that, it's like $1 million in unpaid bets.
$4.5 million.
It's such a ridiculous amount of money that you're talking about here. And, you know, personally, I think athletes should be able to bet for themselves, but never against themselves.
Well, you know, and here's the funnier part too, is if we're looking long-term at this particular story, is what punishment do you give if Ohtani's guilty of something here? Because Pete Rose has never and will never be allowed back into baseball because of the gambling he did, even though he never bet against himself or his team.
Yeah. I mean, he's never going to be in the Hall of Fame, right?
Right.
And that's huge. Like, and for Ohtani, for that to be on the plate, for him to never, that's because he's almost guaranteed to be in the Hall of Fame. Like, it would be difficult to keep him out.
Right.
He's going to be he will be the best pitcher slash hitter.
Slash outfielder.
Slash outfielder of all time. Like, he will.
The guy who could do all these things at one time in a modern era, you know?
Yeah. He will have those numbers. You know, I don't know how long he'll have those numbers, because once you get one guy in that kind of arena, you always have people who are going to want to get it themselves. But
right.
It would be a huge black eye if he was kept out of the Baseball Hall of Fame because of this. But
yeah,
it's theoretically on the table if he was betting concerning himself.
And say you don't punishment, then do we change the subject or change the story on Pete Rose?
Right.
So, and I think it brings a lot of questions into a lot of the finality of baseball, because now there's a surge. I've had online discussions with people about this, conversations about a player, Trevor Bauer. I don't know if you remember Trevor Bauer, but he was a pitcher for a while with Cleveland. Then he went to the Dodgers. He had a supposed case. He was alleged to have been, I want to say, sexual assault or sexual harassment, or both.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing ever happened with those cases. Those were either dropped, or I'm guessing they're being dropped, because now the stories are he should be allowed back into Major League Baseball here in the States. Before even those allegations came out, he wasn't well liked because he did interviews where he does not come off as a nice person.
Yeah.
And I don't like him because he treated our last coach with a lot of disrespect. I thought, even though he was upset at himself, he showed disrespect. And to me, Terry Francona is going to be a great coach in my mind forever. But I think that has a lot to do with why he won't be allowed back in. But if this goes forward with Ohtani, so you got to wonder, what is it going to take for baseball to turn away from certain things? You know,
yep.
Is it just about what's good for the sport, or is it going to be you're going to hold certain principles?
Yeah, I think the way we watched it go down with all the major sports organizations, it's always, quote unquote, what they think is right for the sport. And a lot of times it makes them look like unprincipled, terrible people. I mean, at basketball and football for a long time there, it was just a bunch of thugs.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it was a bunch of people. Like, I didn't watch the Cowboys for a long time, in part because basketball always just struck me as a bunch of thugs, like a bunch of guys who treated other people terribly, who were just, you know, Dennis Rodman is kind of like the main attraction, right? After Jordan.
Well, I mean, like, as a Browns fan, I know that every time I talk about being a Browns fan, if they win, that, you know, there's a lot of questions about Deshaun Watson and how can I watch the Browns with him on the team? You know, you weigh it out. You know, the Steelers with Ben Roethlisberger and his allegations. And it's hard for a fan base to have to deal with having to deal with those kinds of stories. But like you said, you end up doing what's best for the sport, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was a lot of news stuff right there.
A lot happened.
And I say this because this is the week that baseball is going to begin. Guardians start on Thursday. When do the Rangers start? Tomorrow or Thursday as well?
So their first three games are away. So opening, you know, weekend for us is until like the 4th or the 5th. So it's like next week.
Yeah, well, our home game isn't until the 7th, but
yeah, it's next. So our home game is next Thursday. I want to say it's Thursday is our first game.
Our first game's Thursday in Oakland.
Yeah. So hopefully that's not all super old news by the time you get it. We appreciate you listening to us do our sports ball thing. And remember, we've got a website, patandthefatman.com. We're on Facebook and Instagram. The Fat Man has a Twitter handle or an X handle. Is it still called a handle?
Yeah, I guess so. Label.
Yeah.
The Fat Man 1238. Instagram, the Pat and the Fat Man. Facebook, Pat and the Fat Man. I'll try to be posting on at least Instagram and Facebook every time that we get a new episode out for you folks. You know, when they're to come on by and listen. Even if we don't post, come by and listen to our web on our podcast anywhere, not just the website. We're on Apple Podcasts. We're probably available anywhere you get your podcasts anyways.
Yeah, Google Podcasts is going away. It's going to YouTube Music, but it's on there. Stitcher. No, Stitcher's not a thing anymore. Spotify. We're on Spotify. At least we were. Randomly we get kicked off of Spotify. I can't figure that one out. So wherever fine podcasts are sold or given away for free, as it were, you can find Pat the Fat Man. Tell all your family and friends and strangers you meet on the street
If you like what you hear, Patreon, go to, we have a Patreon on our website, a link to our Patreon on our website. Donate as little as $1 a month, $1 an episode that you listen to, up to anything more than that. All of our proceeds right now go to paying our wonderful editor. If we happen to get anything beyond what's we do to keep our editor happy and pleased in editing our episodes, we will try to give back to you folks, our listeners. We haven't figured that out yet. Of course, when we get to that bridge, we'd be happy to share that with you all.
And we're nowhere near that bridge yet. So if you guys want to accelerate us toward that bridge, we'll come up with stuff. But right now, we're not there yet, folks. But we would love to have a buck a show. Super appreciated. Patreon, Pat and the Fat Man. You can find a link to it from the website, patandthefatman.com. Thank you again for joining us. I'm Pat.
I'm the Fat Man.
Stay classy.
Go Guards.
So we wait with bated breath here. Yeah, maybe we shouldn't have started recording.